Yes, ma'am.
As a beginner, how do you decide which program you want to
do? As a beginner, how do you decide? Well, I wouldn't use the one maybe my wife, but not my husband.
That's the least expensive way.
Yeah, it is. You just use that until you get familiar. I mean, what you've got to do is you have to build up some confidence. A lot of this, so much of this is confidence, as a matter of fact. The tools are all, you have that. Well, then start with the phase two or phase three, whichever one you have access to. Start with that until you understand that, because the rest of them are all built on that, all of them. Now, they've become a lot more complex, but they're all built on that. And that will give you the fundamentals. You'll understand early pace. You'll understand factor W, sustained pace. And you'll understand how they interrelate with the fractions of the race also. Now, once you have a grasp of that, then you move to something else. I mean, but I got to tell you, when you don't move. You don't move when you're cranking along at 60 or 70% if you're betting two horses. That's not when you go. All right. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
That's when you retire and write a book.
But that's when you don't go. But any of them work. It's just some of them have just gotten. Like I said, this is the first time I've really become intrigued with a program over a period of time. And I got to tell you, it's been so good because all of you know that James Quinn and I are very good friends. And James is bordering on using a computer for the first time. I mean, it's just been remarkably accurate so far. And Jim, just before I left on this trip, he says, you know, I'm gonna have to start working with that program because I've just been deadly for a while now. So. Any other? That doesn't mean you won't lose photos and you won't blunder in your pace line selection, because you still lose a lot like that too. Yes, ma'am.
Is the thoroughmation for quarter horses as good as thoroughbred horses?
I haven't a clue. I have no interest in the quarter horses.
Quarter horses, but it won't work on thoroughbreds.
There is a separate program for quarter horses.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, it's been very effective. It's that's a whole different ballgame. Yes, it's very good. I would recommend it. I use it.
Mm-hmm. I don't play the quarter horses, so I got to tell you, I've been retired 4 years, December 1. I have never worked so hard in my entire life. You know, I work 15-hour days, 7 days a week. I mean, I literally do that. So I'm paying a big price even now. So anybody that thinks they can do it on 2 hours a day or 3 hours a day, it's still a full-time profession, at least. I've never been a workaholic. Never, till now. I go all the time. So it's not easy. I mean, it can be done, but it is not something you just pick it up and do it. Yes?
He just says he's 51. Actually, he's 29.
I just look 51. I feel 50. I feel 75. I just found out I have high blood pressure. So. Yes?
Yes. I was wondering if there are any versions of the information that will not run on the laptop with an LCD. They all will.
That's what I have, is the Toshiba 1000. I hate the screen. It's so dark, but I've just had it, so I just continue to use it.
I'm having a problem with a program that was sent to me on your 386 to protect the screen between my computer. Now, I have two 386.
Bring your computer with you?
Yeah.
Okay, show it to Jenny, you'll correct it. Don't have problems. We have no problems, we have nothing but solutions.
All right.
Here.
Are there any questions about basic handicapping, any of the models, the profiles, anything like that, any of the factors? Yes?
Yeah, a question about the models. I got the impression from reading the energy manuals and a couple of articles that followed that the models wouldn't work. Keeping a model on energy wouldn't work.
Let me correct that.
I found out it was deadly to do that.
Let me correct that. Oh, excuse me. Right? There are certain things in energy that you wouldn't want to model that we found are not optimal to model. We tell you what you should model: the UXR and the MUV and your paragons. The reason we don't model early, sustained, hidden, and everything is because they fluctuate according to the horses in the race. Now, Tom plays a different variety of races than the creators of the program, who play anything. He's more selective in his races. So being more selective in his races, he has a wider range of things he wants to model. So when you talk about the universality of modeling in energy or in thoroughmation, the model in thoroughmation is done for you. You just print the pictures out and there's your model. But in energy, we always said, please, in fact, I beg you to model UXR, SMUV and EMUV and the MUV and the paragons. So, and we actually force you to model them in your energy reports. And we make you model in your reports on this program by we just kind of draw the diagram of the pictures and you put where they were. So it's, that's modeling. Believe me, if you save the reports you send, you are modeling.
All right.
Yes.
I wasn't going to say anything about Theramation until they got into it. I was going to wait until tonight. But in Theramation, I've gotten a lot of calls from different people who were using it. And I was using it. I went to the track playing Fairflex. And I won all the thoroughbred races except the last one. I got beat in a photo finish by Nose. And this young fellow was there that day. And I called Howard tonight and told him about it. But what is so amazing about Theramation is not that you see the horses running across the screen. That's exciting, yeah. But in Theramation, when you do a regression, if you had the horse in the computer that won that race, even though you didn't win the race, if you will do a regression, you will see it time and time again. The same thing will come up to show you which horse you should have been betting on. Thank you very much.
Yes.
This has a lot to do about the psychology, and maybe you can speak on this, and I wanted to ask you also. When I find that when I'm making a prime bet, even though my model shows it, my energy figures fit, it fits the parameters and everything, I'm a little shaky on it. I mean, even if I'm confident, I'm a little shaky. And I was going to, maybe you can comment on this, Howard. What caused that? Is there something in my psyche?
I can answer that.
A lot of shaky.
Easy shake.
I got to tell you, I was shaking today. You know, I mean, I had a lot of money on a horse. I was shaking. Afterward, I was shaking. But I got. What you're doing is you're paying the experience, the learning experience. Okay, you haven't done it long enough and trust what you're doing strongly enough to know that even if you lose this one, the next one's the winner, and if you lose that one, the next one's the winner. I mean, it's a matter of repeated successes that builds up the confidence. Okay, and that's what I found. That you just pretty much, for the most part, you just put it aside, and you just say this is just another bet in a long sequence of bets, and that's the key. You know, you're not going to make 100 bets at the meeting, or 150, but whatever you're going to do at the meeting, right? It's just another one, and when it's all over, that bet's insignificant. Okay, but you have to know that you've done it enough that you have a profit at the end of a sequence to know that you can take your wins and losses as you go. But you still get keyed up. I get keyed up too, depending on the amount.
Let me address one. I don't know if you heard his question, but he's talking in terms of making a prime bet. Now, a prime bet is essentially talking about betting one horse. Okay, that's where your ego or your intellect or your persona says, I've got a lock in this race. This horse is going to win, and you put a lot more money on it than you would ordinarily. Okay, this is subjective. This is one thing whenever Tom and Dick talk about their prime bets that I have to warn people. What may be a prime bet to them may not be a prime bet to me or Bradshaw or Marion. This is subjective. And only by, and go back to what Tom said, when you have set so much confidence in that your prime bets win at least 36% of the time or 40, then you will have a pattern of doing it. But when you have $1,000 on it, you could be doing it for 5 years and you're still going to quake a little bit because that's the nature of a speculative event. So if it really gets to you, if you find it's physiologically destructive, you might take a less forceful betting pattern and not make them. You just have to, I get a regular medical checkup. No, really, everybody should. If you find that you're getting palpitocardia, or blood pressure elevations, or things that were not true in your, well, Tom's case, he's getting old, but in your case, no, if you find it's affecting you physiologically, you may have to rethink your betting pattern. That's all I can say, because your body is much more important than your winning races. So don't sacrifice your health. You, sir, you had a question.
I was going to ask Tom if he would be willing to tell us a few words about this play today and how he got there.
Yeah, I was just going to tell you that I fudged a little. I bet two horses in a race. So I had two $1,000 bets in the race.
What was the other one?
The other one was Proud Nijin, the exhibition park horse that ran so poorly.
That was that.
Well, see, I would have bet that because Quinn and I talked this morning, and Quinn loved that horse. And my problem with it is that you're asking the horse to transfer the exhibition park ratings to Hollywood Park, and they more often than not don't do that. So I had a kind of split between that and Northern Bounty. I got to tell you, before I started playing with this program, I would not have bet Northern Bounty. I'd have made too strong a case against it. All right, but I have just I've relaxed my own standards because there's so many of them are winning. I'm not going to argue with it. And when I first got it, I was overriding it quite often, and more often than not, it was biting me when I did that. So I just kind of relaxed and went with it. And it was Northern Bounty today. I mean, here's a horse only broken its maiden. It's all it's ever done. It was stretched out to a mile and eighth. It has routed before, but it was all of the lines are sprints, right? So I mean, you got to bite on that. Now the way I handle a stretch out, I use my par time charts. In other words, if the par is 110 and 3. And a horse ran 110 and 1, that's 2 better than a par, right? Well, if the $10,000 par is 144, I project that to be 143 and 3 and handle it that way. Okay, rather than go through all the mathematics and everything, I just use a part-time chart. So I projected him actually to be the winner of the race. But I wasn't sure. I did like Prodnesian. But, I mean, the reason I was shaking, I went like that. That's why. I mean, it came right down to the wire, and I've got a 7-to-1 shot, and that's why I was shaking. I mean,
I came back and looked at the form to see what the hell horse that was, and I said,
I would not have bet that horse a month ago. I would not have. I mean, that's why I say, I mean, I'm very impressed with it. I've just never been that way. I mean, when I did energy, I did it in the closet. Word got out that I was using it, but I did it in the closet. Yes?
John, would you repeat the parameters on those 8 or 9 spot plays that occurred?
Those are mine.
You gotta learn who the players are.
You don't look alike.
The Nationwide, we only got a couple of hundred of these out. But Nationwide, and there's several people in this room who will verify this, Marion, some of them aren't beginners, they're not here, but there are about 3 or 4 in here who will verify this. When you're not a Tom Brohammer or a Marion Jones, when you're kind of like me and Jimmy, I guess putting so much work in these programs, we believe in because we feel that they represent everything that we know and what Thomas taught us. So therefore, we have a great deal of faith in them as opposed to fighting them. So we don't care if the horse is beaten 9 length, he comes out in the top 2, we'll bet him. So we don't have any question about it. But the spot play that has been absolutely phenomenal, even with the worst report we ever had, one person only did 55% his first 20 races, so he had 11 winners. But he had 66.6, or 2 out of 3, when the same two horses, not necessarily in the same order, but when the same two horses came out 1-2 on the automatic adjustment and on the manual adjustment. Now, Marion's had about eight of those a week or 20 plays. 7 to 8 is average. So when you win from 70% to 80% on spot plays, that would be kind of a prime bet. But unfortunately, about Thoromation, I want to tell you something, folks. If you're doing it right, the horse that comes in second is going to win more than the horse that comes in first. And that's not a phenomenon of the program. That's the phenomenon of us. We tend to pick lines from a horse that has peaked and from a horse that is rising. The horse that has peaked will frequently come in first on the program. The horse that is rising will come in second. I've learned to put more faith in the one that comes in second on the screen for win. But if you're, now Brohammer doesn't do that because he doesn't play horses that have peaked. I mean, he has a particular ability to eliminate horses that many of you would never eliminate. No matter how many classes he teaches, you will not get your contenders down as well as he does. So he never has to use the manual adjustment because he knows that the horses belong just pushing it in with the enter. But that is a great spot play.
Would they be both in Paragon A and Paragon B?
You have Paradigms in this one. They may or may not be. If they're 1-2 on the screen, see, Thoromation has a moving screen. The first stop action screen you press verifies the moving screen. We don't have any variegate showing in Thoromation. That caused too many people too many problems. But the variegation of the race is the first stop-action screen, and when that's where you verify the Thoromation. And when they're 1-2 there, and then you hit the manual adjustment, and they're 1-2 there, whether they're 1-2 or 2-1, this has been the greatest spot play we've found.
I think I'm back here, John.
Now, in addition to that, the horse that I bet over there was the number 2 rated horse. Yeah, so. Yes, yeah, way in the back. I think the one before. The Northern Bounty, I mean, it's kind of meaningless to the group, but the Northern Bounty a horse that won over there today, he asked me if I took it from the last line or the one before, and I think I took it from the one before.
I got to tell you, I'm not too pleased the way this is going, because we're doing the one thing that we tried to get away from when we started this session. Let's not focus on this program being better, this having a miracle. Let's focus on you putting the horses in that any program.
For the most part, they'll all get them if you put them in right and you handle it right. The key to winning that was to take that line to a route, just exactly the way that's the way I do it. However you do it, the key to winning it is to expand that to a route. And if you do it, all the programs will get it first or second, I think.
We were getting it with Multiplier before, but now with this, you just put that one button with it. It makes everybody go the same distance.
All right. Well, see, the automatic projector, I don't do it. Yeah, that's okay. That's a good way. I use my part-time charts to predict it. So,
well,
it's however you get it.
I've been going for 11 days at the Hialeah. I haven't got enough to make a right. If I just take my charts and put a race in there, run them against.
Right. No, I'm sure that works fine. Otherwise, it wouldn't be there. Yeah, because otherwise, Bradshaw wouldn't put it there. Any questions now away from the program? I kind of apologize for starting that. I just, because words, you know, I mean, it was like the energy thing. Everybody said, I understand you're using energy. It was always behind, you know, I understand you're using energy. That kind of thing. Or I'm just putting it up front. I've changed because I was the dyed-in-the-wool phase 3 guy. So, and still am to a great extent.
I've got a question. The way you're moving back to it, really, it's on your...
You're sneaky. Yeah,
the Rohammer bottle.
Yeah.
I just got the bid, and... I've got cage-in, and I don't know what to enter into your model from the cage-in.
Beats the hell out of me. Somebody else is going to have to address that. That's the one I never touched. I don't know what to put in. I don't know anything about the program.
You cannot model cage-in.
That's the answer to that question. So I had the right answer all the time, just didn't know it. Yes. Well, the negative class drops? Well, essentially what that is that horses that shouldn't be dropped in class shouldn't be bet. And not that they don't always lose. It's not a given. It's just that they're always 3-5 or 4-5. And if a horse shouldn't be dropped in class, you have some exceptions to that. The very end of a meeting, for example. A horse that's running well at a given meeting, at Del Mar was really a specific track. Horses that ran well at Del Mar weren't necessarily running well at Hollywood or at Oaktree later. So if you were running well at Del Mar, at the end of the meeting, a number of trainers dropped their horse right off of wins to get another race at Del Mar before they had to move. That's not negative. The end of the season, three-year-olds are dropped like hot rocks because after January 1, for the most part, they have to meet four-year-olds. And so when they do that, when they're meeting older horses, they're not protected by that three-year-old-only status they enjoyed in December. So you find from now on to the end of the year, three-year-olds are going to be dropped off of good races. And they're going to be dropped because they know they're going to have to drop them anyway to make them competitive in January 1. So let's drop them now and get the money and then not worry about it. So you'll see a lot of that. Some trainers, very few, but some trainers just specialize. Some guys just drop horses that are sharp. Well, okay, if you know who they are, and there aren't many, so you normally just bet against them. But the bottom line is that a lot more of them lose than should. And the ones that win pay such miserly prices, there's no reason for you to be betting them in the first place. Now, you know, if this horse is going to pay 360 and it's a negative value play, that means somebody else is going to be 4-1, 5-1, 6-1 that's a positive value play. That's the whole gist of that. Because I get mail. I can't answer the mail anymore. So if I haven't responded to any mail I've gotten from you, I apologize. But it just comes in droves. And occasionally I'll get one with a list of horses. Aren't these negative class drops? And every one will pay $380. You know, honestly, the answer to that is, of course they're negative class drops. And that doesn't mean they won't win. But they win far fewer than they should. And at that price, you don't want to do that. You know, I've been against them for years. And I don't regret it at any time, ever.
How many of you are from the Midwest? How many of you are from non-major tracks? Okay, you've got to determine what constitutes a negative class track drop at your circuit, because it's different.
It is, and I got one the other day from someone. The horse had been running for 5,000, 5,000, 5,000, 5,000, 5,000, 5,000, 5,000, 5,000, and then went up to 7,500 and got beat a neck. Came back down to 5,000. Well, the conditions on the 75, if you spend any time with the conditions of these races, you don't have the problem in California because they're always just wide open. You just look at it, that's what they are. But you get these restricted claiming races. The $7,500 race was a race for horses that had never won a race except a maiden race ever. non-winners of two races lifetime claiming for $7,500. So the horse exits $5,000 open claiming company of horses that may have won a dozen races or more and goes in against horses it could never have won ever. So when it went, it actually dropped in class to $7,500. Then when it went back to $5,000, it was going up in class. So we caught a number of those at Woodlands. I mean, I remember addressing a group at Woodlands saying, this horse has got, I mean, this looks like a class jump, but it's not. Look at the conditions on these races. So a lot of the perceived negative class drops aren't. There's some analysis that's required. So in that case, in that example that I got in the mail, just it was just within the last week or two, horses had just gone up and tried easier horses. That's all.
In Louisiana, they do some very strange things, and almost any of these axioms go out the window, too.
Yes?
So I have a question for Marion Jones.
Marion, yeah. You're on.
Today, if you have a turf race or a dirt race, and the contenders, a mixed bag, either they have all turf or all dirt, would you play that type of race?
If they're all coming from the turf to the main track?
No, I mean, if you have if they're all mixed performance or on turf, and today they're going into a dirt or vice versa.
No, I'll pass. I'll pass. I tell you what. And something else, if you get a race, it's on the main track, and 40 or 50% of your horses are coming off the turf. Sometimes they've been running a lot of races in Southern California where 60-some percent of the horses are coming from the turf to the main track. You cannot determine who's going to win that race. Some horses do not perform well at all coming from the turf to the main track and vice versa. So you can't get into that. You should always pass that. I've been passing a lot of those kind of races. They had a lot of them at Oak Tree. Yes.
Maybe you know about this also, Mary. I was going to ask Tom about this. There's a horse.